your daily source of tonnage, policy, and politics in the InfoSec community with Rick Hayes, Keith Pacholski, and Varun Sharma.
Hey, welcome to the ISP Podcast, episode 321, February 11th. Thanks, man. 2011. I'm your host, Rick Hayes, and I'm joined by
Keith Pacholski.
How you doing, man?
Yeah, it's Friday. It started out pretty crappily, but it got better.
Crappily.
That's my new phrase. Instead of like ass-tastic, it's crappily.
Well, I thought you were going with craptastic, but that's okay.
Well, yeah, but
okay. So, anyways, yeah, dude, it is a freaking Friday. So
yes, thankfully.
But you know what? In just 2 days, you'll be back at work.
Thanks. You know, I'm gonna
nothing
go kick
like
myself in the nuts now. Yeah, excuse me.
Nothing like spoiling the
nuts.
Yeah. So, anyways, in addition to being joined by Keith, we're also joined by
Varun Sharma.
All right, man, you can stay on the podcast now. How are you, man?
Just a little bit pissed. I had to spend almost 2.5 hours just to drive 30 miles today because all Atlanta roads seem to be freaking all, you know, jammed up.
And that differs from yesterday in what way?
Say it again?
That differs from, well, actually, let me rephrase that. That differs from any other day in Atlanta in what way?
Usually I get to leave office a little early because I go to the office really, really early.
Uh-huh.
But today I had to get my back checked and, had the x-rays done and everything. So, I know, I left the window over there, Keith. I hear you smile.
How can you hear him smile?
You can hear Keith smile. You can just hear it.
Because my smile is penetrating.
That's right.
That just sounds wrong.
We're going to leave it at that.
All right.
It's the only thing that is, but we're also joined by one Mr. Karthik Ranarajan. What's going on, brother?
Not much. It was a Friday. And pretty good day, actually. I actually did a lot of good work, which never happens with the other 4 days, so it's weird. But, you know.
So do you call woodwork table tennis? Is that what you're now calling it?
I said good work.
Oh, I thought you said woodwork. I'm like,
No. I said good work.
Yeah, I was working the boards, man. I was playing table tennis, working the boards, you know.
No, I didn't actually play table tennis today. I had a 3-hour meeting that lasted till 5 p.m., so I couldn't play table tennis today.
But it started at 4?
No, it started at 2.
Okay. All right. So in addition to Karthik, our last person we've got is, and last but not least, Jordy. What's going on, brother?
Well, waste of a good Friday waiting around for somebody to show up that was later than their window.
Cable guy.
Something like that.
Yeah.
If someone's more late than I am, that's cable guys. That's all I'm going to say.
I think that's physically impossible.
In my defense, I've been on time to all my meetings.
Dude,
here
you're
so
the
far.
Only person I know that tells time by a sundial. Yeah, it feels like it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, it's like a register, right? When you when you go past the end of it, it just rolls over, and then you're early.
That's true. So, in addition to all the normal Friday affair, we've also got a special guest with us, Mr. Iftok Ian Amit has joined us.
How are you? What's up, guys?
How are things in Tel Aviv?
Dead quiet, man. Dead quiet.
It's awesome. Time.
That's because
it is 3 a.m.
3 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. What are you doing online, brother? 3 a.m.
I'm always online, brother.
Unlike Karthik,
I'm
when you say
yeah,
when you say that to Karthik, he's like chat roulette or something like that. Ian's actually probably doing work.
Again, in my defense, I don't go to chat a lot. If I'm online at 3 a.m., I'm actually doing work.
Oh, I thought
chat with my girlfriend, one of the two, but still.
Oh, I'm sorry, dude. I misunderstood. I thought I read in the IRC last night that you were on chat roulette.
I wasn't even on the IRC last night. Why would I say that?
No, somebody else did, that they said they saw you on chat roulette. So, anyways, let's go ahead and jump in. Let's get the announcements out of the way, and then we're going to talk to Ian. We're going to talk about some pretty cool shit. And then I'm going to actually, so yeah, let's just go ahead and do the announcements because I totally screw this up every time I say we'll wait, so because we never do it right. So anyways, let's do the announcements and then talk to Ian.
Today's announcements.
All right, so the Appalachian Institute for Digital Evidence, ADE, is holding their winter meeting at Marshall University Forensic Science Center, Huntington, West Virginia. That's February 17th and 18th. Keith does have his presentation done. It consists
yes,
of two slides.
Done.
It consists of two slides, that. Which says intro, and the second one is a picture of him shooting me the bird.
Wait, don't forget the closing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's three slides.
It's three slides. Let's see. SANS is going to put on a community event here in Atlanta. Jason Lawrence is putting in a Management 414 SANS Plus S training for the CISSP certification exam. That 10-week course starts on February 23rd. You can still register for that. Use the discount code ISDPOD15 for 15% in savings. The Atlanta OWASP is going to be holding their February chapter meeting at the Tilted Kilt. Ian, do you know the Tilted Kilt?
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with the venue.
So if you're in that area, Varun will be buying beers. That's February 24th from 6 to 8 p.m. Varun will be pole dancing from 9 until 10. MyHardDriveGuide.com data recovery class with expert certification at Scott Moulton's class is going to be in Washington, D.C. December 7th through the 11th, and then Atlanta, Georgia will be April 11th through the 15th. Besides Austin, there's still slots available. You do have to RSVP for that. That's March 11th through the 12th. Outer Zone is going to be here in Atlanta March 18th through the 19th. The CFP is still open. Skydog will be on Tuesday to talk to us about that along with Scott. Indiana Linux Fest is March 25th through 27th. You can register. We have a URL for that in our show notes. And BrewCon is going to be in Brussels September 19th through the 22nd. CFP is open if you wish to submit. And DerbyCon, September 30th through October 2nd, Louisville, Kentucky. The CFP is still open for that. And with that, we are out of announcements. Yay. So we've asked Ian to come on, and gosh, I was actually looking at the last time we had you on.
That was a long time ago, right?
Yeah, last May.
That was in July or something.
It was May 7th. Actually,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I had to go find it. I had to find the episode May 7th of last year. So for those of you that are not aware, Ian is the VP of Business Development at Security Art, and obviously Security Art was the folks that we talked about last night, but Ian was also the founder and CTO of an IPS-IDS security startup company that developed some extremely new techniques for attack interception. He's generally just a troublemaker, but he's also a routine speaker at InfoSec. Hacker Halted first, BrewCon, Source, PH Neutral, DEF CON, Black Hat Europe first.
Where the hell did you find that bio, man? This is awful.
It's the truth. You have
set it straight.
Yeah.
So anyways, Ian is a pretty popular speaker. And with that, he's not only just a popular speaker, he's a hell of a smart guy and all-around security badass and really... Quite frankly, he's a nice guy to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and talk to us. But in addition, Ian is also one of the contributors to the Penetration Testing Execution Standard.
And can hold his liquor.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
I'll put that first, by the way. I don't know what you're talking about, but this is what we mostly do at cons, so...
Yeah, Ian, you also developed a tool that we talked about, and I guess it was it was a little while ago, but it was a data exfiltration proof of concept tool that you aptly named the Data Sound Proof of Concept Tool. we've talked about that, and so you, as well as Security Art, are big proponents of the FAIR, which is the Factored Analysis for Information Risk, and we talked about that back in May 7th of last year, and unfortunately that audio is no longer available because, quite frankly, we're out of space. So
really?
Yeah. I was surprised at I was surprised at how much space we were eating up. But anyways, we'll resolve that. We're going to get them back online. But you want to go through and talk about what FAIR is? Explain it to folks who weren't around back in May, weren't listening, and aren't familiar with it?
Sure. What the hell?
Doesn't that suck at 3 in the morning to have to be talking about this?
Yeah, that's awesome. <It's> like... Actually, FAIR is a risk model. It's a risk model like any other risk model, so, you know, it's open to a theological discussion, you know, headbanging in Emacs versus VI style. And there are going to be a lot of risk fanatics that can bash it. There are going to be a lot of risk fanatics that will swear by it. But putting the, you know, the theological wars aside, it's a model that basically tries to quantify risk and express it in a repeated way, and in a way that really connects back to value, to monetary value. So we're not talking again about risk that's high or medium or low or in the middle or God knows what, but you're talking at risk in quantifiable terms. So a risk of X amount of dollars for the next 3 months, of X percentage of occurring in the next year. So you can actually take those numbers and apply them back to your risk management practice and measure them. Which is something that we really like, that we really kind of connected to when we saw FAIR, because as consultants, we're always trying to find a way to express those things, you know, coherently and not just bullshit around with, you know, high, medium, lows. So that's basically kind of the gist of FAIR and how we got into it. It's been a long time. We've been practicing it for quite a while. We're actually at a point where Jack Jones, the inventor or author or whatever you want to call it, of FAIR, has joined and is now officially on the advisory board for Security Art. So we're pretty happy about that.
Yeah, so I guess my exposure, and Karthik, I don't know if you saw it back when you were there, but was at my former employer.
Right.
Without naming names, but at my former employer, we'll protect the guilty here. But at our former employer, obviously, we worked with you, Ian, and you exposed us to that, which just sounded kind of bad. But you
yeah, life was never the same again.
It was never, because I was going to actually kind of say, well, yeah, he showed us that, but then it was just going to head down the wrong path. So the idea was, we you know, there's a lot of folks that aren't really familiar with it. And so when you start to see it, it's like a light freaking goes off and you start to really look at this and say, this is badass. This is something that everybody should be using.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is, it does make it easy, especially when you're talking about risk, that there is no ambiguity. It's not, well, what do you mean by that? What does medium mean? Or what does mm-hmm. what is very high or whatever? What does that mean? And so you can actually quantify that not only with a dollar figure, X amount of dollars over X number of years. This is what your risk is. But you can also put it in a way that not only would your CEO, all of your board of directors, everybody would understand it, from the CFO all the way down to, not trying to be offensive here, but to anyone that's actually working in IT would quickly be able to look at that and go, yeah, if that server was lost, it would cost us this. If that was, mm-hmm. it would cost us that. And they understand that. And I think that it gets beyond that touchy-feely crap of, I don't think it's that bad. You know, that's not really much of a risk model. I don't think it's that bad.
Yeah, exactly. It goes back to the question of, you know, how pen testers usually come back and say, I got a root on this and that server. I got, you know, an OOD. I found a vulnerability on this and that. And you should basically come back every time and say, so what? Why would I give a fuck? It's, you know, how does that impact my business? And this is exactly where it fits in. You know, in the kind of grand scheme of things.
So, and we kind of mentioned it as we were beginning this, I guess, going through. And did I really screw up your bio that bad?
No, I'm just kidding. Oh, okay. It sounds like I actually do something for a living. So it's just
okay. Well, if it's wrong, just let me know. I could put in there all around general slacker or whatever. But that's so the obviously you and Chris was on earlier in the week, and you guys kind of got together, and
bitched around as usual.
Yeah. But one of the good things that came out of you guys getting together is that the Chinese are safe now, because you guys weren't there. But the idea would be the whole concept of this penetration testing, this standard, that, you know, the execution standard that you guys, I guess, kind of penciled together. And by the way, I've seen your diagram.
Mm-hmm.
And
sorry about that.
No. I absolutely thought it was wonderful when I first saw it. I was like, wow, that's really, really detailed. But I could tell you guys were drinking as you went along. But
the only way, man.
That's the only way. But are you guys, did you take that concept of being able to, and you know, Chris has talked about this to a certain degree. Actually, not to a certain degree. I guess he's kind of been pounding it down when in many of the presentations he's been doing about you need to really speak to the business. You need to figure out what's going to hurt them, what's going to put them out of business. And then if you look at that, that's really what FAIR does. So if you take that and you shift it over and move it away from some type of risk assessment in just the broad sense and say, you know, we could also incorporate that in penetration testing.
Yes, definitely. It's you know, each one of us came from a different angle, but we all saw the gaps and everything that was wrong with the industry, eye to eye. I might have called it FAIR, Chris might have called it something else, and again, FAIR doesn't necessarily need to be the, you know, the name for it, but the bottom line is that we're all kind of sitting down and bitching about how fucked up the industry is and how bad it really turned out to be commercialized and just, you know, popping out pen test, just by running tools, clicking report, slapping your logo on top of it, and that we actually made ourselves sit down and just put everything on paper or on digital or whatever it is. Again, I'm not a big fan of semantics, so I'm not going to say, you know, FAIR is the only way to go, but I am a big proponent of sitting down and figuring out, you know, whatever's wrong, and heck, yeah, trying to fix it. And I really hope it picks up speed. I'm you know, the last few weeks have been hectic, and we've seen this monster evolve in ways that I'm sure, you know, I'm speaking for Chris here as well, that it's just blows our minds. And the amount of support and reach out we're getting now from the community is just amazing. And just thinking that this is going to change the industry so much, I really hope that some of the people that are helping us now are not going to regret it later.
I have to tell you, in looking over this, there's the first thing that caught my eye was the fact that you guys have included essentially a CMU evaluation for damn near everything to see where do you stand in the maturity model, because obviously, I mean, you've recognized this, and you and I have had conversations about this, and I've overheard conversations you've had about that, how you have to basically learn to, you know, it's not the learn to crawl before you walk. In this case, you have to learn to be able to sit up and then learn to crawl and then, you know. And so I guess having heard that, I was really surprised to see that in there, and I thought, wow, that's a great way to really show for everybody that is coming, you know, that's not only from an investor but from the business units, that this is where we were, this is where we are. We may be at level one right now, but quite frankly, I doubt too many of us would ever get to like a level five, but, you know, a level four would be something that you could aspire to within a certain amount of time. But you've included that so you can incorporate that in that. Do you see that actually, you know, it's easy to write it down. So I guess the thing is, how did you visualize that would actually happen from a penetration testing standard?
Well, it's basically going out and saying to everyone, mostly the businesses, mostly the customers, you know what, this is what you should be getting when you say pen test. And if you're not getting it, get a fucking refund. Just kick them out of the door and say, you're not doing your job. Take your, you know, canned reports and shove them up your, whatever, your printer port, and give me something that I can use for the business. And with that approach, we kind of laid out the mind map. And as you mentioned, everything from pre-engagement all the way down to reporting and deliverables and you know, how this should look like or what should I get as a business that's getting a pen test that's going to be actually, you know, viable, actionable results, something I can do, something I can go back and say, you know what, if we now take this into account, our business is actually going to be more secure, or God forbid, this is how we're going to see value from this. And so we kept that approach in mind when we put everything together. So, yeah, from again, as I said, from early pre-engagement, just figuring out what's my interaction supposed to be with the pen tester, with the pen testing company. And so again, the mind map talks, or the standard talks, to both vendors, to both, you know, practitioners, as well as to the businesses. And again, hopefully they'll get everyone to a point where I, as a customer, will say, well, you just did a pen test, but it's nothing near what I'm supposed to be getting.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, if you look at what you guys have got from the two components, the intelligence gathering and the threat modeling, that's damn near non-existent in almost every penetration test result that I've ever seen. They may talk about the fact that, oh, we ran this tool, but they don't show the impact of that. Just the fact
it translates
that,
you know, to me. It translates for me. Sorry.
No. You're absolutely right. So tell me, what does that mean? So what if you found all of this information? And so what if this person's talking about the fact that we're having a merger talks with another company on Facebook? What does that mean to me? And so the idea here is, yeah, you guys have included that. But one of the other things is not only just the social aspects, but, I mean, like all the financial information. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are including some stuff in there as part of the standard. I guess you guys are including that, which would also say, hey, we understand how you do your business. Yes, we're not the experts that you are, but we can certainly speak to the fact that if you have financial information that's readily available, that could impact you. And here's the way you can, A, avoid it, and B, this is what the impact and the cost could be to you if this happens. So I really thought that was great. Now, the other one was obviously the threat modeling. And so I really would like for you to go into, if you don't mind, I know it's
sure.
It's early in the morning for you, but could you actually go into how you foresee that taking place as far as the standards is concerned?
Well, sure. Again, it's you know, I think that the approach might have been a little biased on our part from the point of, you know what, we're doing so much homework and so much work just in every pen test that we've done so far in the past few years, and we're seeing how other things are done, and we're like, you know what, they should work harder. And that's where the intelligence and the threat model comes in. And when I do an intelligence for a business, I usually end up knowing the business better than the business owner. And I can tell you the number of times that we've gone into a business, started working with them, and ended up telling them how their business actually works. I mean, you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's the right approach, because you're coming as an outsider. You have a very unique opportunity to learn the business from the inside, from the outside, to go across business units, you know, freely, to take notes and see exactly how things work, find all the gaps in there, realize, you know, this business process might open up a vulnerability in a system that we would have never seen before if we were just, you know, scan it by hand or automatically or whatever it is. So that's basically what the intelligence gathering is all about. It's figuring out the other vulnerabilities or the more business related vulnerabilities and how they translate back to technical terms, how they translate back to business processes. Again, it's a lot of work. So we're kind of antsy about us doing all that work and no one else, or no one else that's like a big five or whatever it is. from a threat modeling perspective, it's just another way to process that massive information and translate it into terms that the business will understand. I mean, you can't just walk into, you know, walk back to the customer with heaps of paper and mind maps and notes and whatever it is and say, all right, this is my intelligence gathering, this is what I know about the business. They should kick you out the door and say, I don't want to read that. So the threat modeling comes in place as an intermediate kind of layer to transform all that information to something that the business will care about, which is, in essence, a way of saying, you know what, this is how the threat is going to shape up based on all that information, based on all that intelligence. This is what it means. These are the threat actors that you should be worried about. Again, based on the line of business that you're in, based on your customers, partners, et cetera, this is their capabilities. This is how it matches up to how you operate, what's public about you, what's private about you, what can be accessible, what can be gained by attacking you, and basically putting that back into a model that's very specific to that, to the customer, and not just general, you know, there are hackers out there, and they're out for you. It's like, great, so you're preparing for zombie apocalypse. How about preparing me for tomorrow's riots downstairs? So that's basically the threat model. And if you look at it in a kind of process perspective, that will later on lead to an actual risk model. That's going to be based on the threat model. That's going to be based on the intelligence.
So, if it makes sense. Oh, no, that absolutely does. And one of the things, not everybody's going to have the ability to have an Ian come into their office and actually work with them. There's just one of you in so many companies. So I guess the without sounding condescending, how do people learn what you've learned without having the benefit of your knowledge and you know, or Chris or anyone like that that is actually – you know, not just focused on the technical side, but also have the soft skills that are required to learn and to pick up those business processes. And obviously having a standard is great. That means you have to do this, but you don't want it to be so scripted that someone's saying, hello, my name is, I need to have the following. So, you know, I guess, how did you learn that? What would you recommend for folks who are trying to expand their knowledge or gain a wider breadth of knowledge outside of just maybe some tool knowledge or pen testing or something like that?
Well, first of all, I got to correct a mistake. It might be just whatever. It's neither myself or Chris are anywhere as smart as the people we work with. And I think that the only thing that I can take from this is my ability maybe to pick the people I want to work with, surround myself with people way smarter than myself, and just parade them around, you know, and say, look at that. Look what I could have, you know, what I could have assembled here. It's not rocket science. And me and Chris are probably the dumber of the group that we've assembled on the Pentest standard. I think what I'm actually saying is that this is not a one-man gig. You're not going to set up your pen testing practice just by you know, putting out, hey, look at me, I can do pen testing, and this is a standard, and I can do everything in here. If you hear someone say that, you know, tell them that I call bullshit on them. It's it's just not going to happen. There are many moving parts here. You need guys that know that to talk the business side. You need guys that know how to do the technical stuff. These are usually not the same guys. The guy that can write OODA exploits and find vulnerabilities and shit like that usually can't do the business part, and that's fine. The guy that can do intel gathering and intelligence analysis is usually not the guy doing, you know, the high-end technical stuff, and that's fine. But again, the standard, we're really trying not to make it like, you know, this is the script, this is what you should follow, but this is what you should do, or these are the areas that you should be dealing with as you go along and perform a pen test. And basically, these are the kind of skill sets that you need to find out there that will fill those gaps, that will fill those roles in the entire process in order to get those things done and complete the cycle.
Well, and I think you actually touched on something that I was trying to, you know, elicit was, is this intended to be a one-man show? And thankfully, you're saying it's
fuck
not.
No.
And
no way.
Okay, and I'm glad to hear that because the I guess, you know, and I'll be honest with you, Ian, I really don't give a shit if people adopt this or not from a big, you know, four or whatever. It doesn't really matter because I think that if there's a groundswell of you know, support behind it, you know, look at what has happened, you know, with just current events today, just see what that, you know, you can get that kind of support and things can change. And so it can be. And obviously the takeaway would be, wow, I really hope that most folks don't look at this and say, okay, we need you to go do every one of these and you need to figure this out. Because then the idea would be you're not going to be, and you know, you're not going to be an Ian that walks into an office and says,
no, you're going to end up just bullshitting your way around every topic there and, you know, saying that you do that and coming up with some, you know, cockamamie document that's going to back you up. And again, we're going to get back to the same point of everyone saying they do everything. You know, we do all the PCI shit and we do all the ISO shit and we do all the BS. I love the British standards. the British standard stuff. It's like, no, you can't. If you're a one-man shop, you just, by definition, cannot do that. So I don't want the standard to become some kind of a checklist that everyone puts on their website and say, well, we do that as well. We need proof. We need, and again, we need metrics inside, built into the standard that'll say, this is the topic. And these are the basic deliverables that you should be getting from that topic in the report, in an engagement. And if they're not there, you know, you're getting wanked over. So
well,
it's not,
yeah, and I think you guys are saying, hey, listen, we're not going to focus this on the tools. We're focusing on the process. And so a lot of people may look at this and say, okay, well, I could go to you know, the pen testing and figure out how to do the tools. And they've done a great write-up of what tools you can do to do what.
Exactly.
So you can take that and say, all right, now, and I guarantee you and I both know this will happen. Somebody will create a matrix which will point, okay, for this, they're saying you need to do that. You need to marry it up to that tool. And
we'll do that. We'll do that.
But here's the point. They're going to say you need to use that tool, and now that you have your complete list of tools, here's how you do it. You follow that, and again, it's you know, the fear would be it's a one man person. You know, you run Multigo. Multigo finds all of this. You find all of, you know, everything that is listed there. Okay, checkbox done. Move on. So you know, and you can see that very poorly implemented, or at least interpreted as okay. Now I've got my intelligence gathering out of the way. Okay, well, do we really need threat modeling? And, you know, you can just see folks skipping over that and saying,
is there a
well,
tool for threat modeling?
Well, is it...
can we just use Excel?
Yeah, is there an asterisk on that? Because that looks optional. Or, you know, I don't think... And really, is vulnerability analysis, is that compulsory? I don't know if that is. And so then they just start saying, well, we're back to running Nmap and Nessus and Core. And so nothing has changed. And ideally, you would like to have folks understand that, yeah, there's... It's great that all of this is going to be married up, but it's not a one-man, you know, one-man show, and that does speak to the fact that you have to have different disciplines involved in a normal engagement. Because think about it, you guys are actually mimicking exactly what I hate to say this, but what an organized crime organization would do. The idea would be you guys are saying within an organized crime organization or a syndicate, they have specialties, you know. You have the lockpick guy. You got the hitman. You got the, you know, Jimmy Two Fingers, who's the combo dude or whatever. You know, you've got all of those folks that
bomb
have
maker.
This. Yeah, bomb maker. He better have more than two fingers, though. I don't know. That means
usually the bomb makers have less than five fingers on each hand. So
yeah, but that does that mean you're not a good one or
no? The not good ones are
oh dead. I'm sorry. Yes, they're dead. The not good ones are dead.
Yeah.
But the idea is, yeah, you're taking that whole thing and saying, listen, we understand that not everybody is and shouldn't be the right, you know, doing every bit of this. So, to me, I think it's great, and I'm glad that you guys clarified that, because I think that, you know, obviously we have a wide, our audience is wide in the sense of their knowledge base. Some of them are very new, and some of them are quite old and jaded, and so we like to make sure that they understood that, you know, this is not intended to be, here, you have to follow this, and the company's going to adopt it, and then put you in charge, you as the one pen tester, in charge of all of this, and expect it to come out any better than what you've got as a deliverable today. So.
Yeah.
But
I totally agree. And again, the approach of cybercrime, you know, organized crime or organization into this is very correct. It's I think that both Chris and myself were looking at it from a kind of a red team perspective, mm-hmm. and marrying the different aspects of a red team back into a pen test standard that's not going to be a red team, that's going to be a basic, this is how your business operates, and this is, you know, why you should care, and this is the risk that you're taking upon yourself. But so yes, you have to take those elements into the standard to make sure that everything's accounted for, and not just, here's a technical scan of your publicly facing IPs. Wow. Great.
Yeah, which is kind of where you, I guess in the, let me pull back at, so I can take a look at it, the pre-engagement part.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a significantly larger, because obviously you cover, you know, like the rules of engagement, and nowhere in here do I see anything that says IP ranges. So I was really pleased when I saw that. So what's your IP ranges? Okay. Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, well, there actually are now. The pre-engagements has grown to, I think it's bigger than intelligence gathering now. The guys put some work in it, and it just blew up. but we did get to a point of IP ranges, but they're not, you know, just the external IP ranges. They're internal, they're partner, they're everything. Everything you can, where you can find an IP, we had to take that into account into the scoping to make sure that, A, it's validated, B, if there's something uber-sensitive, like, you know, some fucked up system where if you just ping it, everything crashes down, which is, you know, it's okay, it's allowed to happen. Just don't touch it. Just know that it's there. Take it into account to begin with. Just don't fuck up with production systems. That should be there as well.
Yeah, because how many times have we all been on an engagement where it's like, oh, damn, I meant to tell you, you really can't be, we can't have you touching that.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You did what?
Yeah. What do you mean we can't touch that? Like, you know. Yeah.
Literally, you can't. It's going to fuck up the business. All right.
Yeah, don't tell me you nmap that, because we already know that nmapping will screw that thing up. And I'm like, dude, it's your SAN. He's like, yeah, I know. But you understand it better than I do, so okay.
It's touchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got a personality.
Yes, it's a temperamental woman in that case. But
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, and I'm looking at an older version of this, but I do think that just from, you know, we've talked about this in some of our discussions on here about the deficiencies specifically on the scoping and mm-hmm. the pre-engagement, you know, that whole interaction that takes place. It seems like almost sometimes after the fact, hey, yeah, did you ever get my contact information or something like that? And, you know, we're all guilty of doing that. So I think that mm-hmm. including those key components in there is ideal. The one thing I did like was the identification of the goals. Absolutely. I don't know about you, but I have very seldom, I think I've seen maybe three or four that actually had defined goals of, I want you to do the following. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, it's wonderful if you could actually say, what do you want us to achieve? What are you looking for? Because
yep. it's still kind of half-baked, because we do need to break goal identification into smaller pieces and kind of lay out, all right, this is the business goals, these are the technical goals, kind of talk to each department or make sure that everyone is being addressed. This is the CFO's goal, you know, it's probably the most important one. What do you want me to do here? But yeah, you need that. Otherwise, you're just fucking around and trying to break it, you know, without any idea of how does that affect the business or why is this good for you.
We can tell when Keith comes back and when he leaves.
Yeah, we can hear you. We can hear you.
I was just going to comment on something real quick. It's just, like, it's all the times the problem that we're having is...
I know it makes me horny, but yeah. I didn't know this stuff makes other people horny.
I think one of the problems that all the testers...
Yeah, by the way, dude, you don't realize the following he's got because of that. He's pretty big. If he'd wear rainbow colors, he'd be all
he's
the rave.
Big.
Oh, you know, I'd kiss my ass. So, I mean, here's one of the problems I guess a lot of people actually run into is even with a lot of the requested information, like asking a customer to actually define what's in scope, a lot of the tech people just don't understand how to actually gather that information correctly. So it's like, yeah, what are we going to test? I mean, like you said earlier, it's like, yeah, we defined this address space. Well, how does most testers don't understand how to actually translate that address into what's actually of value to that specific customer. So I think that's some of the problem that a lot of the testers are actually running into at this point.
You know, it's actually interesting because you'll find that your test actually begins at the scoping. And at that point, you're actually starting to test the company because you will get those answers. You have to get those answers in terms of what's the scope, what's this address, what's going on here. And a lot of times you're going to get, you know, blank stares, like, we don't know. All right, find out. And at that point, your test starts because they're going to have to find out and you're taking notes as they do. It's like, hey, did you know what's on this subnet, you know, married to that subnet or whatever it is? And it's like, oh, it's the VoIP network. Oh, it's the SAN. Oh, it's this and that. This is exactly where you start testing. You start taking notes and figuring out, all right, so they have no clue about this subnet or that subnet, and that's where the fun begins for you, for them, for everyone. And
so here's a funny one with the scope. Sorry. So I actually had Rick saw this quote already where there was actually a company that was doing pen testing, and you know they actually went through the whole, you know, short questionnaire of, you know, we need the address space of what we're going to test. And the company that was actually doing the testing didn't actually take the time to validate the information that the customer had given them. So they had actually gone through and, quote-unquote, scanned 5,000 systems.
Not necessarily all for the same customer.
Right. Well, it gets better because all those 5,000 systems that they scanned, none of the addresses had actually been allocated to anything. So that they were actually routed to null.
Nice.
And they actually reported this back to the customer. So also during the scoping, actually validating the information that you're getting during scoping is kind of critical that a lot of people don't actually think about, or most of the, you know, the, I guess, puppy mill pen testing companies out there.
Yeah.
But real quick, Ian, back to what you were talking about, when you're starting to take those notes, that's actually also very beneficial for you to help develop rapport with that company and those individuals so that, you know, you can then become...
Establish trust then.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you're helping them figure out what's their business.
Yeah, and so you get beyond just, we are just a security guy from a, you know, you're a vendor or a consultant or whatever, to now where you truly are. And it's, I think sometimes it's an overused word, but you truly do become a partner with them, that someone they can rely on that, you know, if you do it right, that's what your goal should be, which is you leave them better than you found them and that they feel like they got value for their dollar, because just like you would, I mean, if you went into a store, you would like to think that you got value for your money, and so I think that it would make sense if you could, you know, by doing that. But sometimes I think that, but you know, currently, and well, I'm not even going to get on the way currently things are done because there's so much shit that's wrong that we could talk for 2 hours about that. But the idea would be that you know, this is obviously a huge step, and I think it's a I would certainly love to see it become the industry standard, and so I think it's got. I think it's going to have some legs.
It's got potential. It's got potential. And again, I'm just dreaming of the day that we're going to stand up there and say, "This is how bad we sucked so far as an industry, and this is our proposal for this. You know, for moving over, getting over. You know." Just being so fond of ourselves and patting ourselves on the backs and doing something really useful.
Yeah,
for the customer.
Well, hopefully it'll come back to the day when you go, do you remember back in the day?
Yeah. We just ran Nessus, clicked report, and that was it.
Yeah. Back in the day, that's all we used to do. You know, you then become the crotchety old person who's talking to the young guy.
You can just run tools. That's it.
You're a tool running a tool. Wow.
Yeah.
Back then, man, it was so much easier. I don't remember how we imported an Nmap into Nessus, but I know we did it.
We did it, yeah.
Jordy, you had a question.
So, Ian, when are you and Chris coming out with the Pentest standard cert?
Oh, God. we...
Well, that was kind of cheap.
Touché.
just kidding.
Oh, God.
No pressure.
Well, we would actually like to you know, join the dark side and make this a formal standard. And, you know, part of PCI, ISO, whatever it is, just to gain some recognition and force companies to say, well, PCI states that I need a pen test. And, oh, by the way, here's the appendix that defines what I should be getting as a pen test. So, can I get that? So, we do need to think about really standardizing this and not just, you know, our standards of getting drunk and making sure that everything is, you know, that I've finished a bottle of wine while pushing out the report because I need to be in the muse, but an actual standard.
If there's going to be a real future in it, yeah, you got to have some way to teach everybody, basically.
Yeah, I think that was something, Jordy, you touched on.
Yeah, back to the Tilted Kilt, huh?
Well, yeah, but that's a valid point, though. And I'm not sliding certification in any way, shape, or form, but I do obviously think that it would be nice if there were formal training that was offered. And so have you guys even thought about that, or is that just kind of in the future? Right now we're just focusing on the standard, or where are you?
Definitely focusing on the standard. It's funny, once in a while we do get asked, now I'm the we is security art, to run training on, you know, one aspect of this or another aspect. And it's hard, you know, just covering one one node of or one branch of this entire mind map is really hard. So providing training for this whole thing, wow, that's going to be...
Yeah, it's going to be a big task trying to distill that down to a, you know, two-day, five-day cert or course or whatever.
it's going to be a beast. But, you know what, you're right. You're probably right that there does need to be some... Or, you know what, I would even take the approach of the tools. You know, here are the tools that are relevant for this phase. And say, you know, these are the industry certs or training that you can take to get qualified for this specific skill set of performing a pen test. So I wouldn't really want to, I mean, I can't see one place that's going to give you all the training for all the aspects of this, because again, we're going back to, this is not a one-man gig. So I'd hate to see one guy take expertise in every part of this, because it's going to be like a freaking genius.
But that being said, you could probably do something like that with FAIR, because that's just one component of all this, right?
Yeah. Again, you know, you can run training on FAIR. We run training on FAIR, but it's just from the risk model perspective. It's not from the execution of vulnerability analysis, exploits, you know, threat modeling, intel.
I see.
So, yeah, I'd probably go down the road of pointing out the different skill sets and kind of, you know, this is the A-team that you need to build up to run a pen test properly. And these are the skills that they'll need. These are the recommended certs and trainings that they should go through to get to the point where they can do this.
I think that's in and of itself would be huge, at least in my personal opinion, if you could get to that. Because we've had discussions about certifications, and Jordy may be a little bit jaded about that, but the idea would be instead of having somebody say, well, you need this and you need that, or, well, yeah, but that sucks, you need this or you need that, just give us, you know, hey, if you want to do this, and for folks that are new, if you want to learn this, you want to do this, these are the certifications that we recommend. This is what we suggest that you know. If you want to do this particular component of this standard, that's what you need to know in the certifications associated with it. These are the tools that are going to help you either elicit the information or document it or track it or do whatever you're trying to do for that. Because, I mean, obviously there's seven, you know, phases, so we could talk about each individual one, but the idea would be to say, this is what you know, if you want to do that, that's what you have to know. And you have to do it in this particular style or way.
So to clarify, sorry to cut you off there.
but to clarify,
the pen test standard is kind of something that's designed to be executed by a team. That's the sense I'm getting, not just one guy.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
There is no way you can run this by yourself. I cannot run this by myself. It's just not feasible.
Yeah, everybody comes to the table with a different set of skills and executes the pen test that way then.
Well, and think about it.
Because you don't want to get one guy doing everything because you know you're going to get a crappy job at some point of time. You know, at some branch of this, of the seven phases of pen testing, whatever you want to call it, you're going to get a crappy job done because this guy used to be, you know, like a risk expert, or this guy used to be, you know, the technical guru for vuln finding and exploitation. So he's going to miss out on other aspects. I want you to assemble a team that can execute, you know, together each and every branch to the best of, you know, the best way possible.
I think you said it. You said before the A team.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think it's, I mean, it's very doable. I mean, you can still find the piece part that you're going to fit into. And, you know, I mean, your sales folks that are out there trying to...
That's exactly how we cut down, yeah, you know, the work on, in terms of working on the different elements of this, you know, in the group. It's not like we were saying, all right, everyone here knows everything about every branch. No, it's like, all right, who can do this? Who can do that? And people just kind of popped in and out, you know. And every branch has got a small team assigned to it to develop it. No one can do everything. You know, I can contribute a little bit to everything, but I can probably nail down a whole branch by myself. And this is exactly where we're coming from. So we got a bunch of people. Each one comes from a different, you know, practice and perspective, that can totally nail down, you know, a specific angle of this and contribute to some others. So together, we're hoping to get, you know, everything really laid out nicely.
So what if people want to help with this? Is there still room for any help, or is it kind of closed right now?
I'd hate to say that we're closed. We're always looking for more people to help. I think that right now we're at a phase where we're trying to kind of move forward slowly, get people that are committed to the entire process, and we're still joining people in. We're never going to say, oh, this is our little thing, so you can't join. Because obviously, if you have something to contribute, we'd love to get it on, you know, and document it. So we're still accepting. We're, you know, more than happy to get more people on. I just joined, you know, a couple of people in the past couple of days.
And if you want to reach Ian, he can be reached at... No, I'm joking. I was gonna his home phone number, you can call him.
That's my face.com.
Nice.
Just respect the time zone. That's all I'm going to say. No, I'm joking. But, man, I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us. But real quick before we go, because I know we've gone over, what actual date are you guys looking to have the first draft released?
Well, we have a milestone at the end of the month, at the end of February, and basically at the end of every calendar month, we're trying to nail something out that's going to be a substantial advancement. I think that as an end goal, we're looking at end of July, beginning of August, to have this finalized.
Cool.
I'll just leave it with that.
And that's all I'm going to say about that.
And that's it.
And nothing else. Well, listen, man, I certainly appreciate you coming on. You know you're always welcome on here. Guys, if you're not following Ian, you need to follow him. Freaking...
Like I need no more stalkers, yeah.
You absolutely do. Brilliant guy, you know. So, anyways, right, Ian, thanks for staying up with us. And it's late night with Ian. I don't know why they just get that. I think I've just.
So what are you wearing?
Yeah, I think I just named this show.
I'm wearing nothing. I've got a ball gag on.
Oh, didn't need that visualization. So, anyways, man, thanks for joining us. Have a good weekend. It's already Saturday where you are, but thanks for joining us, man. And guys, yeah, so we're going to have links to Ian's blog, Security Art. I wanted to talk about that damn study, but we'll have to bring you back on to talk about it because we talked about it last night and just. How it presented in for, well, screw it.
Did you download it?
Yeah. Hell yeah. So I actually read it, and it was English, which I enjoyed, by the way, because the first posting was in Hebrew and didn't really, couldn't read that. And by the way, it's hard to find a way to convert Hebrew out of an image into English. So you have to.
There's a program for the iPod Touch now called Word Lens. Have you seen that thing?
No, but I basically looked at words and said, I think that's what this means. So seriously, I looked at an image and looked at and compared it to the text, and I figured out, okay, that's, I believe, this.
Oh, my God. You did it the hard way.
I did it the non-Hebrew speaking without an iPod or an iPad or anything like that.
Just put a link to the security-r.com/download-report. That's it. It's
well,
that's
we
where
yeah we
the
actually,
English one.
so the idea was we talked about the data that you guys included in that, and one of the things I wanted to kind of touch on real quick, if you don't mind spending probably the next 4 minutes talking to us about, was. The way that you guys went about testing those AV products, and granted, we all know that AV is weak, but I think it does make a clear point that, hey, you're not protected. And the fact that it only found 17% out of what was available out in the wild is...
17% at best.
Right. Well, yeah, and that was McAfee and with the Artemis.
Yeah. Artemis and the... like satellite link or whatever.
Yeah, so I mean, that's obviously the best out of what is currently available, and I guess for all of us that use Norton or anything else, they lag.
From what we've tested, yes.
No, absolutely right.
And again, just two words on what we tested, because this may be maybe a little baffling, but we took, over the course of about 3 months, every new piece of malware that came out that we can lay our hands on, the minute it came out, and we just ran it through VirusTotal. And so it's fresh. This is what you're going to be hit with. Now, take, you know, why did we do that? Why were we so, like, fucking nasty? Because it cycles 3 to 10 times a day. So you're going to get, you know, 10, 15 new samples a day from the same location of malware distribution site and pushed out. So this is the real test. It's not a big deal if you wait a couple of weeks. Everyone's going to get to the 30-40% detection.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
But what matters is those few hours, those few couple of days, and that's where AV are basically put to the test. So we just did that as a metric to see how bad or how good these guys. Fair up. We've got a lot of slack on those numbers. I got, you know, vendors calling and it's like, can we see your corpus? I'm like, yeah, just check out the latest stuff on the malware sites. It's not that difficult. And they're all on VirusTotal. I mean, we submitted every one of them. So you have the corpus. It's just that, you know, you didn't push out an update with that signature for 2 days, and that's why you're at 3.10% detection rate. Sorry.
No, and for those of you that haven't seen the report, it goes beyond just the what we talked about from an AV perspective. That was probably, yeah, I think, the most shocking. We did talk about the fact that you guys do give some coverage to, like, Aurora, Zeus, and SpyEye, and that kind of stuff, which is, yep, which is rather interesting. I did want to give you shit about the fact that you used the term cyber war, but that was, I was not going to do that openly because I didn't know if you did it or Yoram did it, so I didn't want to say you.
I did everything, and I heard you say cyber war more than once in the past few weeks. So
yeah, but it's a drinking.
Shut up.
It's a
drinking. I've heard Chris say cyber war in the past few months, so... Cyber, 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 cyber. There we go.
Okay, but it's a drinking game on the podcast, so that's... but I did think that the fact that you were kind of alluding that there's this arms race, that's really what I wanted to talk to you about. And was that specifically related?
Everyone is saying it out loud. It's not. I'm not even alluding anymore.
No. Well, but I guess was that based upon Aurora and Stuxnet solely or other things?
No, it's based on interaction with, you know, several actors in the field.
Okay.
From way up high in, like, NATO and UN and stuff like that, down to customers.
Okay. So I figured
there's an arm race. It's going. It's, people are feeling that they don't have the biggest dick, and you know, so they need Cialis or whatever it is.
Well, and I was joking last night and saying that I bet there's some information from Mossad that probably got maybe included in that, and that's why I was actually hoping you would
say, no. I'm still talking, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But
you hear that, Handler?
Oh, but yeah. So, and dude, I appreciate you staying late and talking to us. But this it's actually a very good report, and I think it's actually, in my opinion, more accurate than what we reviewed when we talked about the Cisco. Because it's actually more relevant. It's stuff that we actually talk about. So, with that, man, yeah, I'm going to include the link so folks can go download it and give them. But see, you got to give an email address to get it.
Just Miami. Oh, you no, you just do a mail-in error or something like that. It's fine.
Okay. All right. So, anyways, yeah. With that, dude. We're going to go ahead and jump out here. I'm going to hit the song again, and we're going to play it, and then hopefully it'll play. So, anyways, man, thanks for joining us. Everybody, we'll be back Monday with Dave Shackelford. He'll be joining us 6 p.m. as normal. Next week, Tuesday, we've got Sky Dog and Scott Moulton, and then Bill Dean will be joining us to talk about incident response and forensics. So, Ian, have a good weekend, man. Thanks, everybody. Everybody, good night, and bye.
Good night, guys. Nice. Good night. Right. Rock on.
All right, hang around, Ian.
Good night. So I sunk your battleship. I'd be taking all your chips and your bits and hit the slip. See, hacking back in the day wasn't shit. It was tricks, but it got rougher when the buffer overflows got in the mix. Script kiddies hit the bricks. Microsoft got pissed. Next thing you know, Metallica was getting hit with that Napster light.